The political world is becoming increasingly volatile and unpredictable, while at the same time having a profound impact on the lives of citizens across the globe. This is Polis Podcast, and I am Thomas Barton, the founder of Polis Analysis. Every week, I'll be in the virtual armchair with relevant experts from Polis teams to discuss the key developments shaping the political world. All we need is for you to join us on the virtual sofa. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first ever Polis Podcast episode. My name is Thomas Barton, and I'm the founder and CEO of Polis Analysis. Polis Analysis is an organization that provides fact-based, impartial, and accessible analysis of global political developments. So every week, I will be talking to experts in my team on the key political issues of the day. So today, we'll be talking about US-China tensions, which is a really important topic for a lot of our readers. And with me, we've got our lead analyst, Anne-Caroline. Anne-Caroline has got a rigorous academic background in issues in China, South Asia, and also on Russia. And Anne-Caroline, if you want to tell our readers, first of all, a little bit of background on the US-China tensions and what has caused this rivalry between these two great powers.
First of all, hi, Thomas, and thank you for having me today. I'm really happy to open the podcast seasons at Polis. Well, to come back on your first question, which is about the origins and the reasons behind these US-China tensions. Well, first to give a bit of background, historical background, China has opened up in 1978. And since then, you can see that the country has taken a more and more important place on the geopolitical scene and economic scene. And it was boosted by the WTO, so the World Trade Organization accession of China in 2001. And since then, so since the beginning of the 20s, you can actually see that the previous US administrations have had already highlighted what it was calling at that time the unfair trade practices of China, and was also highlighted the fact that the UN was undervalued. And so you could see in previous administrations that there were bills that were passed, for instance, in the Congress or in the House of Representatives to sort of punish China for these unlawful practices. So you can see that the grievances on trade and the economic grievances are started way long ago, and it's not something new. It just sort of boomed with the Trump administration, and we witnessed the trade war with this really strong rhetoric that was used. And it kind of backed down with, in terms of rhetoric, I mean, with Biden administration, but you no longer talk about a war, but more about a rivalry. And the Biden administration still acknowledges this sort of competition and rivalry with China. But as the Biden administration said, it doesn't seek conflict, but just competition.
Okay, that's fascinating. And I know that you've spent some time in Beijing as well, so that I know that you're well placed to provide this sort of insight. And tell us, Anne-Caroline, what is the impact on the rest of the world, or on the global economy? And how are the tensions and the rivalry that you mentioned between the US and China actually having a wider impact?
Okay, so in terms of global economy, well, you can see that the US wants to sort of limit the Chinese influence within the economy, in the global economy. It's not the only domain, though, but we can focus on it. And one of the main domains that I think we could take an example on is the semiconductor industry. The tensions that we've seen during the trade war and that emerged led a more fragmented supply chain to emerge. It was even more fragmented with the COVID-19 pandemic. But so China is behind in terms of technology in the semiconductor industry, and the US is seeking to take advantage of China lagging behind. And in terms of this rivalry, the US has basically tried to block exports of semiconductors to China, or like to limit. So now it means that it's more difficult for China to access these really highly technologic, highly skilled semiconductors. And so it kind of exacerbated the semiconductor shortage we've witnessed so far.
And Caroline, that is a really interesting insight, because as we know, the semiconductor supply chain is absolutely critical for individuals across the world. I mean, semiconductors are used in our computers, in our mobile phones, and we're living, especially since COVID, in an increasingly digital society. And a lot of consumers will therefore be impacted by the semiconductor shortage and what happens to that supply chain. As we know, a lot of Europeans read our analysis at Polis, and I'm interested to find out what the US-China tensions and rivalry you talk about has an impact on their lives. I mean, what's interesting is that Europeans have become increasingly skeptical of China, especially since developments in Hong Kong, since the outbreak of COVID-19, and how the Chinese government dealt with that, over the stated genocide against the Uyghur Muslims. There's a lot of animosity that's growing in Western countries towards China. We know that, according to the Pew Research Center, in terms of those with favorable views of China, only 22% of UK citizens have a positive view. It creeps up to 25% in Germany, 26% in France, and 28% in Italy, which is that last country is a beneficiary of Chinese investment and infrastructure, which we'll touch on later. So it's clear that a lot of European citizens have a bit of a negative view of China. And I just want to understand what impact the US-China tensions have on Europe.
Well, I think one of it's actually linked to the previous example that I was taking on semiconductor. Basically, it sort of helped, or like sort of heightened this sort of fragmentation of the supply chain and of the market. It disrupted the global market, I would say. So it's more the impact on the consumer that will be felt, and of course geopolitically, because it's always uneasy to deal with a country which you are in competition or rivalry with. But I would say, if we keep on the technological side, one of the main example we could quote is the 5G and Huawei. So if you go back a bit in time, just to give you a bit of background, it was in 2018 that Huawei became the second largest companies in terms of smartphone manufacturers behind Apple. And it really started to, I think, trigger the US that Huawei was taking such a bigger and bigger share within the market. And especially in terms of price, Huawei infrastructures are less expensive than other European suppliers. So the Trump administration really started to hit on the jury of China, and really decided to establish this ban on Huawei infrastructures for security reasons officially.
Sure, and we know that actually when it comes to the US-China rivalry, the race. The technology race of our time is where the two powers are really competing. And the Huawei example, you mentioned it as the Chinese, part of the Chinese jewelry, is a really interesting way of demonstrating that actually tensions between the US and China had a real impact on European governments. And we know that they sort of struggled between determining whether they had to do what was in their best interest economically to roll out 5G networks, which would deliver more economic growth, knowing that Huawei is the world's largest provider of components and functions needed to build 5G networks. And by the way, as you mentioned, they were much cheaper than other alternatives in Europe like Nokia and Ericsson, or whether they ignored the economic argument for Huawei and focused more on geopolitical and security concerns and aligned themselves with the demands of the White House. In terms of making sure that Huawei was banned from 5G networks in Europe. And we've seen that some governments who initially took more of a compromised position on Huawei, like the UK that initially allowed Huawei in some parts of the 5G network, then changed their view after extensive pressure from the US government. So I wonder, therefore, Anne-Caroline, we've just talked about the fact that US-China tensions have a real impact on Europeans. We've just used the technology example in relation to 5G and Huawei. How do we think moving forwards that Europe will respond to the rivalry between the United States and China?
Well, just as a side note, but I think it's important to mention it, This rivalry between China and the US is not only economic, it's also, and technological, as we mentioned, it's also about values and political ideals. And so we could say it's an ideological battle. So what we can see here is that the Biden administration has sort of launched a charm offensive towards the West, towards the European Union, and really wishes to strengthen the ties with its allies to counter China. And this narrative of countering China is also widely spread among the Chinese elite. Like, they are aware that the US is trying to slow down China's expanding influence. So in terms of how it will, what will happen for Europe, I think it will depend on whether this rivalry will worsen or not. The EU really wants to position itself as a third power on the global stage and really wants to sort of draw its own path, political pathway. It doesn't want to rely too much on the US, neither on China. It wants really to be independent, and that's why you really have this sort of narrative of EU autonomy, EU sovereignty. But I think it will mainly, if this rivalry worsens, the EU might have to choose to pick a side. And I think we will always naturally tilt towards the US because of the values that we share and the political system in common that we share. Even if you look at the G7 summit, Italy, which was historically has signed recently agreements with China on the Belt and Road Initiative, recently stepped back a bit and distanced itself from China to show that it was still willing to tilt back towards the West. And I think that's what also we see with the the G7 initiative that was mentioned by Biden, the Build Back Better founding scheme that is willing to sort of narrow to fund the gap in infrastructures in developing countries. So I think we can see that really the EU naturally is willing to sort of navigate between the US and China, but still naturally tilt towards historically towards its values of democracy and so on.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really interesting example when you talk about Italy with their recent Prime Minister, Mario Draghi, suggesting that he might move back from the One Belt, One Road initiative. And just for our listeners to understand, the One Belt, One Road initiative is an infrastructure project led by China where they provide loans and investments in infrastructure for developing countries. And it has been seen as a way not just of supporting economic development in the developing world, but also of actually exerting greater influence in terms of Chinese influence. That is, and we've seen in countries like Sri Lanka, for instance, where they failed to pay back their debts to China. The Chinese government has been able to use that debt diplomacy, as President Biden calls it, to exert greater influence over that country. And there are other examples too. But it's interesting that, as you say, European countries are siding more with the US in this rivalry. And it's interesting that the Build Back Better World initiative announced that the G7 will be a means for Western powers to try and counterbalance that infrastructure funding provided by the Chinese state to developing countries. They said they want to, as you say, narrow the infrastructure gap, but that's a 40 trillion gap. So we'll have to wait and see what money Western powers are actually willing to commit to this initiative. But it sounds like, Anne-Caroline, Western powers and the US are willing to compete with China. We know the EU talks about sovereignty, but fundamentally it has struggled in the past to be a coherent foreign policy actor. We'll have to see whether they decide to actually forge a third way for themselves, or whether a lot of European countries, along with the United Kingdom, of course, will align itself more with the United States. And we did have a Polis daily briefing that looked at the consequences of the G7 and the funding commitments that the United States and others were willing to make to counter Chinese infrastructure spending. But in short, Anne-Caroline, we can expect, I think it's fair to say, you know, more competition between the United States and China moving forwards.
Yes, this is what will happen. As I mentioned during the first minutes of this podcast, the Biden administration made clear it does not seek conflict and a really confrontational approach, but it seeks really to take advantage of this rivalry. And in a sense, if you want to be optimistic, you can say that good things can actually emerge from competition or rivalry, because it will push the US to maybe innovate more. It will push the EU to forge its own diplomatic way, as we mentioned. And it will push China to try to narrow the gap, for instance, in the semiconductor industry we were mentioning. You know, China is said to be two generations behind in terms of nano-sized chips. So it can, something good can appear out of this rivalry and this competition. And also, for this is something that we could actually mention for people that are interested in entrepreneurship. You know, if you want to make your own tech company and let's say it doesn't work in Europe, you can still sell it to two other actors on the tech scene, which is the US or China. So you can still have like three different platforms on which you can actually talk to. So you can see something positive. You can see something that is potentially positive out of this competition.
Well, look, I think that's a nice note to end on, that actually strategic rivalry is not necessarily always a negative thing. And international politics and geopolitics has been seen in quite a negative light in terms of developments in recent years and months. So it's nice to finish on a more positive note. And of course, Polis Analysis will keep closely monitoring, as I'm sure you will, and Caroline, with your team of analysts, the developments between relations between the US and China. Well, look, I hope that our listeners enjoyed this first episode of the Polis podcast. It's been a fascinating discussion. Next week, I'll be in the virtual armchair with Jeremiah, who is our head of research at Polis Analysis, and we'll be talking about the issue of fake news and growing misinformation in our societies. So until then, it was great to have you. Thank you so much for listening, and please do sign up to the Polis Analysis free daily briefings at www.polisanalysis.com. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Polis podcast episode. At Polis Analysis, we are fully devoted to helping individuals better navigate the political world. So we would love to hear your thoughts, and please do share any suggestions you may have for future Polis podcast episodes. Follow the Polis podcast channel on Spotify to access our weekly episodes. And if you want to better navigate the political world with accessible, fact-based and impartial analysis of global politics, then sign up to our free newsletter at www.polisanalysis.com. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.